Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interactive Media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
The views expressed here within the programs and chats do not necessarily represent the views of LiveParanormal.com.
You're listening to Live Paranormal Radio at LiveParanormal.com. You are listening to Shriekfest Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Shriekfest Radio. This is Denise Gossett, the festival founder and director. Shriekfest is a horror, thriller, sci-fi, fantasy film festival, screenplay competition. We've got it all. Our website is shriekfest.com. We just celebrated our 16th year, our sweet 16th year. It was fabulous and wonderful, great films, fabulous scripts, wonderful people. Oh my gosh, I met so many great people. And our next installment, our 17th year, is looking like it's going to be October 5th through the 8th. So mark your calendars. If you have projects to get them in now. First deadline's February 1st. If you don't have a project this year, make sure you come and check it out. It really is a lot of fun. You meet some great people. There's great networking. I have really strived to have Shriekfest be like a family vibe, so no one's walking around reeling off their resume. Everyone is just kind, and it's a very warm atmosphere. People always come up to me and say, wow, this is unlike any festival I've been to because of that feeling. And it's kind of like a little getaway in Hollywood, but away from that Hollywood vibe. So definitely check it out. We have a monthly newsletter you can sign up for on our website, and we are on Twitter, and we are on Facebook. Come give us a like and a follow. We'd appreciate that. And let's see what else. Shout out to our producers of Shriekfest Radio. Thank you guys so much. This has been going on for over 4 years now. Kind of crazy. Can't believe it. But it's a lot of fun. And let's see, I think I've covered all the main things. Tonight's call-in number, if you have a question for me or my guest, is 347-202-0316, 347-202-0316. And if you're shy and you would rather not be on the air, but you have a burning question, you can always tweet it at Shriekfest, and I will periodically glance at that for questions. Or you can email at shriekfest@aol.com, and I will check that as well. All right, I am super excited about my guest tonight. It is Doug Bost, and he is the 2016 screenwriter winner for the best thriller feature screenplay of The Bride in the Box. Great, great script. I did not get to meet him because he was in New York, but so I'm ultra excited to chat with him tonight. So let's welcome Doug to the show. Hi, Doug. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So, I get to hear your voice finally.
I know. We get to meet in the virtual world.
Yes.
That's what I like. I was just so pleased to be part of your festival, and I was so, honored that to get that award for my script.
Yay. Well, you earned it for sure. And what did you think of that trophy?
It is awesome. That trophy, for one thing, it is a heavy trophy. Like, that's a serious, it's got a real weight to it. And
yes.
I keep it in my office. I've been keeping it in my office. And, you know, people really have a question about how much blood is on it and where the blood came from. And so it's a conversation piece in a very good way.
Sure. Well, you know, Doug, a few guys, and, you know, when we were putting this whole thing together, it didn't even cross my mind about traveling with it. So a few guys from last year were getting on a plane. They've got this in their carry-on.
Sure.
And, of course, immediately they get stopped.
And yeah, you have a conversation.
Yes.
Homeland Security wants to know about Shriekfest.
We're very popular with Homeland Security. So, yeah, and, you know, being so heavy, it's like almost a weapon in itself. So, yeah, kind of scary.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love that trophy. That was great.
Oh, good. Yeah, so, because did you even know what it looked like before it got to you?
No, I had no idea what it was going to look like, no. So it arrived, you know, in the box like in Seven, you know, when Brad Pitt gets the box. I was like, what could possibly be in here?
Be this heavy in this box.
Yeah. Hope this isn't what I think it is. But no, it's great.
That's really funny.
So where do you get those made? You must have to get like 20 of those, right?
Well, we used to have tombstones, and so it's only been around for a couple years. And I had put out a post saying, I'm thinking about changing the trophy. Anybody have any cool ideas? Well, a volunteer, Daniela Batsheva, she quickly sent me over 3 pictures. And so, like, I'm downloading them, and I'm opening them, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. Oh, that's kind of cool. And then I saw the third one. I'm like, oh, I must have it. And
should we tell people what it looks like? Because what it looks like is a buzz saw.
A circular saw.
A circular saw that's spattered with blood, as if it has just been used for some terrible purpose.
Right. So the circular saw, there's actually 2 circular saws and a film reel going through the middle. And the front of the circular saw looks like an old film reel. And, of course, splattered with blood. So, yeah, so she came up with this idea, but then, you know, I thought, you know, I just called Trophy Place. How hard can it be? Oh, my gosh. It was like a year-long process because we had to find someone who was willing to sculpt it. And then we had to find someone who was willing to make the molds. And then, of course, the molds had to be put together and hand-painted, so no trophy is alike. Crazy.
Nice.
And the horrible thing, so, you know, we have this wonderful man who did the finishing touches and everything and did the molds and the hand painting. And so we used it for 2 years, and now he's retired. So now I am starting the process of trying to find someone to do it again. It's insane. And, of course, you know, I find places, and they're like, we need to make our own molds. And I'm like, no, you don't, because those were extremely expensive, and I'd like to use ours a few more times.
Yeah.
So we'll see how this goes. It's going to be interesting. So,
well, I mean, I think it says something nice about your festival, about how much care you put into it and about, you know, how unique you work to make it.
Well, thank you. Well, you're going to have to come out and check it out because you will love the festival.
That's what I hear.
Great party.
I could be there. You know, I was very excited to find out that I won the award. I couldn't be there. My friend Jeff Ayers came and picked it up for me and initially told me about how damned heavy it is.
And he was great, too. He did a nice little speech. He said something, I don't remember his exact words, but it was super kind. Just
he's
lovely.
A very eloquent. He's a very eloquent guy, yeah.
Yes, he is. So let's talk about The Bride in the Box, because it is an awesome script. How'd you come up with the idea?
Well, thank you. You know, I actually came up with it when I was on vacation in Maine a few years ago, and my friend Maeve Kinney told, we were sitting around at lunch telling ghost stories, and she said, oh, well, that kind of reminds me of The Bride in the Box, like it was some old story that everybody knew, and she told me the story, and the more, you know, it spooked me, and the more we talked about it, I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And it was funny because we were in Maine on vacation, my wife and my daughter and I. And my daughter was really young at that point. She was like, you know, 2 or 3 years old. And then as I thought about the ghost story more and more and thought about the, you know, and sort of put it together with us being on vacation up there, it all kind of started to make sense as one story. And so that's what that's how I wound up sort of putting all that together. So the script is, it's kind of a ghost story that you don't know whether there's actually really a ghost in it. And that, I hope, kind of makes it a little spookier even. It's about this husband and wife who are fighting in a way in their relationship in a big way. And they're kind of, without intending to, they're using their daughter as a kind of a pawn between them to fight with each other. And in so doing, they're neglecting their daughter, and they are on vacation up in Maine, and she comes under the spell of this local ghost story, this local legend. She's about 7 years old. And by the time the parents realize that something has gone horribly wrong, and that this ghost story might be real and might be affecting their daughter, they have to find out whether they can even save their daughter and bring her back. And the ghost story itself is a big part of the telling of the ghost story is a big part of the movie too. And it's a nice kind of a spooky story.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote it so that, I kind of wrote it because, you know, I've written a lot of scripts and it's hard to get stuff made. And so
yeah.
I thought, what if I wrote something that was as easy to shoot as I could make it? What, you know, what would be the really, you know, without just doing something that all takes place in one room, I wanted to write something that was very few characters, no special effects, very few locations, and just make it. And I wanted it to be a genre movie. I wanted it to be scary and a thriller, because I wanted it to be something that everybody would want to come and see, and yet something that could be made for very little money.
Now, when your friend kind of told you this little story and it sparked this interest, was the story she telling, was there any truth to it? Where did she get this story from?
I think she got it from a kid's book, actually. There's a there's a series of books called Stories to Tell in the Dark. Do you know those books?
Yeah, I kind of, that sounds familiar.
They're like young adult, but they're really kids' books, and they're ghost stories, and there's three of them as far as I know. Maybe there's four of them. It's like Stories to Tell in the Dark, More Stories to Tell in the Dark, and then there's a third one. And they're just, you know, maybe they're 3 pages each, and they're all, you know, it'll be the, you know, the hook on the door handle as a story, and it'll be all these different, you know, some of them are urban legends, and some of them, you know, sort of classic ghost stories.
Sure.
Retold. And then there's a few that I'd never heard before. So, of course, I had to go and get all those books and read all those stories because a lot of them are good.
Wow. Yeah, well,
I
think that's
a good ghost story.
Yeah. And what's so cool about your story and your script is, like, none of us was familiar with anything about any of this. So I don't know how similar this is to what she told you. Or did you just run with a smidgen of the idea?
I ran with it. I mean, it's the basic ghost story that gets told in the movie. The basics of it are from the story that my friend told me, that Maeve told me. But I really embellished it. I tried to make it a local story, and I tried to make it fit with the things that the family had to deal with, and the things that the daughter is worried about. So I certainly made the ghost story something that worked for my script in a way that it doesn't have to in that book.
Sure. And what's cool, it's eerie and, but like when you get to the end, you kind of like, you're not sure if there was a supernatural element to the story, but you don't really care because it was creepy and spooky and, it was great that you didn't have like a ton of characters. Some writers go overboard and you can't keep track of the characters, and you kept it, more minimal, and which made us care for them all the more.
Well, great. I'm glad. I had, I played around. I had more plot in there, in a few drafts, and I found that, I could keep taking things out and make a lot less, and it wouldn't feel like less.
Ooh, Doug, also, repeat that, because so many writers need to know. He took things out. Oh, my gosh, that's brilliant.
Yeah,
because so many, you just, if you don't need it, you don't need it.
You don't need it. And you find that there are so many things that you think you need. And I have a friend who talks about scaffolding being part of the writing process, that you have the scaffolding around a building. You put up the building and you put up all the scaffolding around it, and you think that's the whole thing, but you don't need all the scaffolding. You wind up taking a lot of things away so that you just have what's left, And so I try to do that with a lot of I'm not always successful at doing it, but I try to, pare stuff down, because also I think in The Bride in the Box, like it goes from scene to scene, and the audience, I hope, will be a little even more engaged, because they kind of have to fill in, like, oh, how do we get to this point? Oh, that makes sense. See, this is a little later, and here's what's been happening. And they'll stay active in the story because they're figuring it out with you.
Right, right. I want to read you a little bit of what one of my judges said when he judged your script. He said, "This script was an engaging ride. I never knew what was going to happen next. Although the supposed supernatural elements are sparsely dispersed throughout the script, there is palpable tension, drama, and an eerie atmosphere mood on almost every page of the script. The Bride in the Box story is unlike anything I have ever heard, seen, or read before. This was a wonderfully written story that creeped me out while reading it alone at night." Wow.
Good. Excellent.
Wow. I don't think you could get a better compliment.
No, that's pretty good. That's really nice. Yeah, no, if people are genuinely creeped out by it, the other thing about this script is that before I wrote it in the version that you saw as a screenplay, I wrote it as a radio play, and it was only half an hour long. And it was very bare bones. And that also is like creepy, but I think that helped me to start with something very short and, expand it without expanding it too much, knowing that really the essential parts of the story can be boiled down to,
half hour, 40 minutes. You did it as a radio play. Did you get to hear it read?
I have actually recorded it.
Uh-huh.
So I've heard it read, but I haven't we haven't finished editing it yet. I have written and produced radio plays for a number of years with my friend and my partner in producing these radio plays. His name is Jeff Ward. And Jeff and I have done a number of plays that I think you would enjoy, because a number of them are sort of in the horror and suspense genre. Mm. And this is our newest one. We've recorded it, The Bride in the Box, as a radio play, but never just haven't quite finished it.
Oh my gosh, how cool. And you've been doing quite a few of those. You've been doing the radio plays for a while, haven't you?
I have. I've been doing radio plays for over 20 years.
Oh my gosh. And do you get in on the reading too, or are you just producing?
I do. And writing? I like to perform. I'm a ham, so I like to I definitely like to perform in the plays as well. The other thing about The Bride in the Box that can't sort of be oversold is that I wrote it for very specific. I wrote it with specific people in mind.
Oh.
I wrote it really about myself and my wife and our daughter. And in the radio play, the three characters are played by me and my wife and my daughter, who's now 10 years old.
You're kidding.
No, it's like...
How cool is that?
I guess it's cool. It's also, you know, kind of like, you know, is it, co-opting your family too much? I don't know.
Hey, if your 10-year-old can handle it, does she get spooked out or creeped out?
She did for a while. Yes, she did. She really wanted to do it, and then we started recording it, and she got really creeped out by it. But then, a little while later, she heard what she sounded like in scenes that were kind of assembled, and then she was like, "Oh, I like that. I want to keep doing that."
Oh wow! So, do you think she got bit by the acting bug?
It's possible.
Uh-oh, that's not a good thing, you know, Doug.
Yes, I know. My wife is a wonderful actor, and she's tried to steer our daughter away from that too.
So you've acted, your wife acts, and now your daughter may be going down the same road. Wow.
We will see.
You know, I have an 8-year-old, and everyone always tells me, you got to get her into acting, got to get her into acting. And anytime I say it, she's like, no, mommy, no, thank you. I don't want to do that. And I'm like, good. But, you know, the more bigger parts I get, like some of her friends are like, your mom's famous. And I'm like, Riley, I'm not famous. Trust me, mommy's not famous. But I'm worried that she's going to start hearing that enough where she'll go, hey, I want to try.
Huh. Well, maybe she will, though. I mean, that's – and you know, if it's something that we've been talking about how if it's something that our daughter really wants to do, great.
Right.
But I don't want to be the person to sort of, you know, walk
For
her
sure.
into the
right.
Casting director's office and make her do something.
Right. Oh, that's the worst.
Although I've written a play for her and then made her record it as herself. So really, I have absolutely no credibility in saying what I just said to you.
Hey, she didn't have to audition.
Right, yeah.
A little nepotism going on. Oh, that's funny. So once you... You heard this story from your friend, and you got inspired to write this. How long did it take you once you started writing?
I guess it took me once I started writing the screenplay, it took me about a year to write it, I guess. A little less than that, off and on. I was writing other things, you know, at the same time, but that's about how long it took. It was pretty fast, but I knew a lot of it, and a lot of the scenes, it doesn't have a lot of scenes in it. It's, you know, the scenes are pared down, so that made it a quicker thing to write.
Now, do you find it difficult trying to write several things at once?
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes, but I have ended up doing it for years. You know, get one idea and you get part of the way through it and get an idea for a short film that can be made quicker and work on that. So
sure.
I don't mind jumping around as well.
I think we might have a caller on the line. Let me see.
Oh.
Hi, you're on Shriekfest Radio. Who is this?
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
We can. What's your name?
We can.
My name is Bernice Baumler, and I'm calling to congratulate Doug on getting your award, which I think is far cooler looking than the Golden Globe.
Well, cool. Thank you.
Thanks, Bernice.
Yes, it's I. I wasn't able to get you on the computer, but I was able to dial the telephone.
Well, Bernice. Bernice is a wonderful fan, and she's also my mother-in-law. She is the grandmother of the star of our radio play, my daughter, and my wife's mom, of course.
And Bernice, what do you think about all this spooky, scary stuff?
Well, I've been listening to Doug's, you know, radio plays for, and they are very spooky, and I would not want to be in a house alone listening to them. But they are.
You got to have a lot of friends over when you listen, huh?
Right. But he's done a lot of other work too, and he's really very, very talented, and we're very proud of him.
I'm proud of him too. You got a bunch of fans, Doug.
I know. I love radio plays, though. Do you like radio plays?
You know, I've listened to some in the past, but not in a long time. You'll have to tell me where and when. I'd love to listen.
You have to listen to the Dan.
that's her favorite of my radio plays. Yeah, a play called The Dan. That's not a spooky one. The Dan is one that's about a guy who's way too obsessed with Steely Dan.
I love it.
But you can find the radio plays that I've done with Jeff Ward. You can find them on iTunes or on Audible.
Okay, and then why don't you tell me and everyone else how exactly they can find them on iTunes? What are they under?
If you go and look for if you do a search in the iTunes Store or on Audible for Union Signal, the plays will come
Signal.
Up.
Okay.
Union Signal is the name of the company that Jeff and I have, and
okay.
There are a few different titles. There's one called Dead Man's Hole that I think that you would especially like because it's a
Dead
real
Man's
classic horror story. But there's a number. There's a number there.
So when you guys do these, they're pre-recorded. They're not live.
No, they're not live. Yeah.
They're,
the production is really one of the keys, and that's one of the things that it's been we have a nice company of actors that we work with in a lot of these plays, including Carolyn, Bernice's daughter, and Jeff's production skills are wonderful. So the plays really sound very really sound like you're there.
Wow. And what made you guys get into doing these radio shows, radio plays?
Well, I loved scary plays when I was a kid, you know, because I grew up in Maine and we got radio signals from Canada, and Canada played a lot of old radio plays. They played The Shadow and they played more modern horror shows. They had one in the 80s called Nightfall that was really good and scary. So I grew up listening to those scary radio plays, and they're so self-contained, and you put on your headphones, and you just are transported to this potentially terrifying place. I just really loved how scary they could be in a short period of time.
Have you thought about making films with them?
No. The Bride in the Box is the first one that I have really transferred from being a radio play to being a script, yeah, being a screenplay.
Really? So the Bride in the Box is not your first screenplay, is it?
No. I'm just saying the Bride in the Box is the first thing that
you
did as a radio
over.
Play and then later wrote it as a screenplay.
Ah, I was going to say, well, you're far too good a writer for this to be your first screenplay.
No, I've written a few, yeah. I worked on a movie that actually got made a few years ago, which is
tell me.
Was a very exciting experience. I was a writer. I was not the only writer, but I was a writer on a movie called Diminished Capacity, which was a comedy that I wrote with a guy named Sherwood Corrally. Sherwood Corrally is a novelist, and he's just a great guy and an excellent writer. And he and I adapted his novel to be a movie. It's a comedy about a young guy who has been hit on the head by accident, and he can't perform his job because he has temporary amnesia. And he takes a break from his job in Chicago in order to take care of his ailing uncle, who has the beginning stages of dementia, and his uncle wants to stay out of being put into a nursing home. He doesn't want to be forced into a home. And his plan for how to stay out of a home is that he's going to sell the most valuable possession that he has, which is this incredibly valuable old baseball card. So these two guys go on a road trip to a baseball card convention to sell the card. And it's a very light comedy, but it's a very sweet movie. And we had a great cast. It was Alan Alda and Matthew Broderick.
Wow.
Great
love
people.
Them.
And this was 2007. So we had Louis C.K. was in it. Bobby Cannavale.
Oh my God.
Virginia Madsen, Dylan Baker, Carolyn Baumler's in it. It's full of really, really good people. And it's a fun movie. So that
sounds
movie
amazing.
Was so exciting to work on, you know, to go and go to the set and they're working on, you know, the things that you wrote.
That's really cool.
You just want to keep recreating that experience if you can. You just want to do this,
right.
You just want to do it again.
Well, how did that come about? Like, okay, so you guys wrote the script. How did it get sold? How did you guys get Alan and Matthew on board? How?
Terry Kinney is a friend of mine, and he's a great actor and director. He is one of the founders of Steppenwolf Theater Company. He wanted to make a feature. He'd never made a feature film before. And he read the book and loved the book and developed it with Sherwood, the novelist. And then and brought me in to work on it. And it was in development for a couple of years. And it was funny. Terry was pretty sure that he wanted Matthew Broderick to be in it. And he asked Matthew Broderick if he would do it. And Matthew Broderick just said, yeah, I'll do it. Whenever you're ready to shoot, let's do it. But he wouldn't sign anything, you know. He wouldn't, like, put his name down. And so everybody was nervous. Everybody was like, oh, you're not going to do it. You know, and he wouldn't sign. But when it came time, and Terry was like, okay, listen, you know, we finally have the money together. Everything is kind of lining up. I just want to, will you still do it? And he goes, I said I would, yeah, let's do it. Let's do the movie. So, I mean, it's just like he didn't want to sign anything. He didn't need to, but he just was game to do it. So that was great. And
is great.
Yeah. So it was really, it got made really by the passion that Terry Kinney had for the book and the story, and to bring all these great actors together to shoot it.
Wow. Now, and you've done some short films as well.
I have. I did a short film just last year. I wrote this short story that was adapted into a short film called Policy of Truth, and that went around to a number of film festivals, and I think it came out really really nicely. It was directed by Nick Demos.
And how did you come about? Like, how did you meet him?
I met him through my manager. I have a literary manager, and he introduced me. And, you know, again, Nick Demos was a theater guy who really wanted to, you know, he wants to make movies, and he wanted to start with making a short, and then I'm sure he wants to make features as well. So he read this story of mine and, you know, had ideas about it and really thought that it could be a film, and he was right. It turned out very nicely.
Wow, that's really cool.
But it's a very different kind of script. Like, it has nothing to do with, I guess I don't find that I'm working in one genre, because The Bride in the Box is, you know, is what it
sure.
is. It's a thriller and a ghost story, but the Policy of Truth is, you know, it's a story about a father and a son, and it's a very, you know, simple little family drama. And, you know, the other script that I was talking about, Diminished Capacity, was just a straight-up comedy.
That's great, though, that you can do all of them.
I like to write all kinds of things.
Now, you've also directed. If you had to pick between directing and writing and acting, what's your first love?
Oh, I like writing much better. I think
yeah.
I'm much better at it. Yeah. I've enjoyed, I really like acting too, but I like writing much more. Directing is, it's really stressful. And I've directed this short film called Focus Group that was based on, that was from my own script. And that was the most fun I ever had directing, but it was so much work. It's hard. Do you direct at all?
I directed a few things in college, and yeah, it is stressful. And because like if it's bad, it's all on you, you know, because you're like the main one. It trickles down.
It's about, you know, you want to put together a great team of people that you can depend on and work with. And I watch people who I think are great directors. I don't know that I am. I think I'm getting better every time I do it, but I definitely prefer writing.
Kind of stay in the background a bit, but it's gotta be okay. So like when you were on set with Diminished Capacity, and they're doing a scene that you wrote, and the director says, we got to do some rewrites here. Does it bother you? Are you fine with it? Or was that, or did that not happen at all?
It happened every single day.
So many writers don't realize that it happens all the time, not to take it personally.
Well, I didn't realize it. I mean, I had this picture of myself that I write a script and then it's done, and then they go off and make it. But in fact, you go to the script, you go to the set, and things aren't working. They don't have this set. This actor can't be there. They're running out of time. We need to take these two scenes and these four scenes and make them into one scene. You know, so you're constantly writing, and it's wonderful. It's like you're constantly problem solving, and that's exciting. I love that.
It's kind of like a game. You're put on the spot, and you got to perform instantaneously.
Yeah, if you can do it, if you can write your way out of a problem, that's exciting to me. I love to try to do that. And you know, with diminished capacity also, it was fun to be on the set and work with all these different actors who had so much more experience than I had. You know, I just, it was exciting to have, you know, like Alan Alda working on a scene that I had written, and he brings, you know, decades of experience to how to play these things. And he knows, you know, so he was tweaking things that in, always in a good way,
right,
but only minor things. Like he never overstepped or changed anything that didn't need to be changed. But
wow,
it was exciting to work around people who just are really experienced.
I'm sure. And I'm sure it probably even helped your writing in some ways, because you were probably like, oh, I like what he did there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, what are you currently working on, like today? Did you work on anything today?
I did not work on it. I did not do any writing today. Boy, you're making me feel bad, Denise. It's true. I didn't write anything today. Recently,
okay, what about yesterday?
I finished a
did
a
you write
play
a grocery
that I'm
list?
Do a reading of. Well, I work in advertising, and so I wind
okay
up writing a lot of things that are not, you know, just for me.
Right.
So there's a lot of writing that goes on, but it's not all just for me. But I wrote a play recently, and I'm trying to put together a reading of the play in the next month or so to hear that aloud. And I also wrote a pilot for a TV show called Criminal Character. I really want to find a way to get that out there. It's like a heist. It's a show about heists, and every week is a different heist. And it's really
cool.
It's really fun and, you know, exciting kind of action comedy. So I've been trying to get those things going. I have a screenplay that I've been working on that I'm going to finish next. Like that, my next thing that I'm going to try to finish is this screenplay. But I have a problem with it that I can't quite solve. The problem is, you know, an internal problem in the plot of the screenplay that I've been working to solve, and I haven't figured it out. But if I figure it out, then I'll be able to finish it.
Okay, here, I want you to try something. So before you go to bed tonight, I want you to either write down or just lay there and think about the problem. And I want you to tell your subconscious mind, I need an answer. And let me know if it comes to you this week.
All right, I will. I will do that. It's funny because the script that I'm talking about actually came to me in a dream.
See, there you go.
But I think that's the problem in a way, because it really worked in the dream. But it's a dream, you know, so it doesn't have to work when you wake up. But I've been trying for a couple of years to make it work in the waking world.
It will. It will. The answer is still in
out.
Your brain. You just have to pull it out. It's still there.
All right. All right, good. I think you're
trust
right.
me.
I'll get back to you.
I have a friend that, and this just freaks me out. I wish it would happen for everyone. He would literally, he wrote an entire script. He would go to bed. He'd dream it. He'd wake up. He'd write it. He'd go to bed. He'd dream the next part. He'd wake up, write it. The whole thing.
Wow.
I don't know what he was tapping into. Now, I didn't read the script. It could have been horrible for all I know. But he did write a whole script from dreaming it.
Well, I heard that that's how Satisfaction came to Keith Richards, right? That he wrote, he woke up in the middle of the night with the song, wrote it down, and then fell back to sleep and didn't remember that he'd written it until the next morning.
Oh, wow. You know, it's if you really start reading about the subconscious and the conscious mind, what we are capable of is amazing.
Yeah.
Truly amazing. So try that and let me know how it works. And right. That's your homework. I try to give people homework every radio show, so that would be your homework, is to try right. that out.
What's your homework? What are you working on right now?
My homework? Oh, gosh. Do you know that Shriekfest is already – we're already bombarded with submissions. Already.
Well, you're already accepting submissions. I saw that, yeah.
It just opened.
It's fantastic.
So I personally have already watched 12 movies.
Wow.
I know. And the crazy thing, they're all good.
Really?
Not one has been like, eh. They've all been good. I'm going, oh, gosh, what does
Great.
This mean? It's already hard to pick the ones that get in because they're so dang good.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting. Yeah. And on top of that, being busy with Shriekfest, you know, I've got some things up my sleeve for this year. But I've just been an auditioning freak. I cannot believe how many times I've auditioned this year already.
Great.
Yeah, it's really,
great.
Really great. Well, you know, how you, like, know that things, like, are in the works? Like, you can just feel it? That's what this year feels
yep.
like for me.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I don't quite feel that yet, but I'm hoping.
You will. It's coming. you should, because you've got all these things going on. You've got the radio shows, or the radio plays.
I do.
Sorry, you can call it a radio show. And you've got a podcast. And you've
I
got
do.
A
I have a podcast.
Going, and you've got
yeah.
a pilot.
No, I think. And I've been, you know, I've been submitting my stuff around, trying to get people to read it. I think it was really wonderful to win the award in Shriekfest because I put it right on the laurels right on the front of my script immediately so that I can send it out and and
Good.
Make it a little easier for people to read the script. So
you should touch base with agents and managers too, because so many people got agents after they won.
Uh huh.
So use that as a selling point, especially if you get one in LA, because they'll definitely know Shriekfest.
Yep. It's hard. It's hard to. It's hard to get past the door with a lot of management companies, I find, even, you know.
Yeah.
Even having one Shriekfest.
Right, exactly. And that's why hopefully I will be able to send you some referrals. I haven't quite had so many people asking lately about scripts, but I do get them throughout the year. And when I do have people looking, you know, I will always send them your way.
No, I'm all great.
So
I would love it.
See if we can't get this thing made, because I think it should be made. It'd be great to go see it.
It would be great to go see it. I would love to have it actually screen at Shriekfest.
Yes, I would love that too.
That's
full
what
circle.
I would like.
Yeah,
but I would love to come and I would love to come and just see come and attend your festival next year if I could. That would be fun.
Yes,
it'd be an excuse to get out to LA. I really would like to get out there. I haven't been years, and
you know what, Doug? I may have an idea. There is a filmmaker from last year who he won Best Sci-Fi Feature Film, and.
Uh-huh.
He's great, and he's been just, you know, popping out a lot of films. This might be right up his alley of interest. I will have to see. Maybe I'll subtly mention it to him and see if he would be interested in taking a peek.
I would love that.
He would be perfect for it. And if not him, I know a lot of filmmakers.
I do. I know that.
It would just be a matter of getting the money, but it's not like your script has all kinds of crazy, crazy things.
Yeah. No, it really is a matter of getting a little bit of money together to make it.
Right.
I've thought about directing it myself, because I feel like I know what I want it to be.
Right.
I think I would love to work with with a director who brings more experience to it too. But it's the kind of thing that I feel like you were asking about directing. This is the kind of thing I feel like I could do well at because I know what I
really
know what I want with it.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so you might want to keep that in mind too. You may want to hold it for yourself.
Yeah. But I'd be interested in hearing what your what that filmmaker thinks of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, before we run out of time, I want to make sure we get all this information out to everyone. Where can they find you? Where can they hear your stuff? Where can they see what you're about? Just tell us everything.
You can, if you're interested in the radio plays, they're on, as I was saying, they're on iTunes and they're on Audible. You can also get them on Amazon as a CD or an MP3 CD. They're from the company's called Union Signal. If anybody's interested in reading scripts of mine, they should just reach out and contact me directly about that. I guess I could give you my email, which is douglasbost@gmail.
And you're on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. I'm terrible at Twitter. I never use it. I'm on Facebook a lot.
Doug.
And I what's that?
You have more homework.
Twitter?
Yes.
Oh, no. Do I have to learn Twitter?
Yes, you
the
do.
The horrible orange
because
man.
It's so
the horrible
important.
Orange man uses Twitter.
Okay, here's why you have to use Twitter. Because
yes.
It's great for networking. It's great for building your fan base. You're going to need that fan base. You already have a fan base with your radio plays.
Uh-huh.
You have to get them all following you. You should probably have a Twitter account for your radio plays, too.
Yeah, you're probably right. I just I'm resistant to Twitter, but you're probably right, yeah.
No, it's so important because, okay, let's say you do decide you want to direct this script. And,
uh-huh.
You know, you're talking to people down the road. It's silly and it's stupid and we hate it all, but it is so important when they say, well, how many followers you got?
Mm.
It sounds ridiculous, but this is really what this business has become. Like, how many fans you got? And before you could say, I got all kinds of fans. Well, now, like, they go by numbers. Well, what's your Twitter followers like? What's your,
jeez.
You know, your Facebook likes like? It's all ridiculous. What's your Instagram? So Twitter is great. And another great thing about Twitter is you can follow anyone. They don't have to follow you back.
Uh-huh.
And you could pick, like, some, let's say you have a dream director to direct one of your scripts, or you have a dream actor. You can follow that person. You can comment on their things. And the crazy thing is sometimes they'll comment back.
Sure. Yeah.
It makes the business very small on Twitter.
And very direct. Like, you can actually get direct contact with people.
Yeah. Yep, without bothering them.
Right.
It's a beautiful thing. So your homework is to use it more.
Okay. My homework is to think about that plot problem and to figure out how to use Twitter more often. That's very good homework. I think you're absolutely right.
And, you know, next time I ask you to be on the show, you're going to be like, you know what, I'm really busy, Denise.
I'm sorry, my Twitter followers really are telling me not to. I don't know. When I hear about followers, I just think it just sounds like Charlie Manson to me. How many followers
right.
do you have? I just think. But I know you're right. I know it.
I know. It's all creepy and weird, but it really, really is important. I mean, well, like for Shriekfest, if I go to a sponsor and I can say we have 21,000 followers on Twitter, that's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the same thing would be for you if you're looking for funding for a film.
Yeah.
For you to be able to say, I already have a built-in fan base.
To be an influencer, yeah.
Right, and my buddy over at Shriekfest, she's got 21,000 followers, and she'll retweet anything I ask her to tweet.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. And since I just said that, if you need anything spread out, please send it my way. If when you're about to, you know, put out another radio play, send me the links and stuff, and I'll retweet it, and we'll target your audience right there with all these spooky radio plays.
All right, I definitely will.
Cool.
I definitely will.
Thank you for coming on. This has been a lot of fun,
Doug.
Thank
you so much for talking to me.
And I think, you know what, it's terrible. I think Bernice is still here. Hi, Bernice. I'm so sorry we forgot about you.
Well, it's so fascinating to listen to this, but I was thinking I might keep somebody else from calling. That was the only worry that I had. But it's just terrific. So it was one night for me.
Bernice,
you are
I'm so
a doll.
Glad that you're, I'm so glad you called in. Thank you very much.
So
yes,
am I.
Me too.
Okay. Long live Shriekfest also.
Thank you, Bernice.
Okay.
Okay, bye, Bernice.
Okay, bye.
Oh, she's adorable.
She is just the sweetest.
Well, Doug, thank you again. This has been a whole lot of fun. And like I said, if you need anything shouted out, I'm more than happy to do it. I love your script, and I have no problem telling people.
Great. That's really all I can ask is to try and find other people to read it and share that script, because I would love to, you know, really make a connection with somebody who's gonna make it happen. I think I think it's easy to make, and it would be a successful film. Like, I think it would appeal to people.
I do too. I really do too.
So
and I think it would be a nice breath of fresh air out there from all the other movies that they're showing in the theaters.
Yeah.
Horror-wise and thriller-wise.
Well, thanks so much.
All right.
Thanks for having me on and being so nice.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you back. And, yes, please keep in touch. And, you know, and maybe like in 6 months we can do this again and we'll chat about whatever you got going on then. And I know you're going to have all kinds of Twitter followers and that script will be finished.
Absolutely. I'll tweet about it as soon as I'm finished with it, of course.
I love it. All right, Doug, thank you again. And
say
hi to your wonderful family and your daughter, and I will talk to you soon.
Okay, take care. Bye.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. Ah, that was fun. He was great. I'd like to say make sure you read his script, but, you know, it's not exactly like we want the world reading it, because he wants it made. And if you have money out there and you're looking to make a great script, please, we got to get you in touch with Doug, because it is a fun script. All right, guys, I will see you back here next week. Keep pursuing those goals. Very, very important, especially with this new year here. The biggest thing is to write them down. Write down those goals. So if it's write a script, write down that script. And I know that's daunting and it's terrifying, especially if you've never written one before. So then what you do is you work backwards and you break it down into tiny little steps. And maybe day one, all you're going to do is say it's going to be about a ghost or a vampire or whatever it may be. Maybe that's all you do day one. And then maybe day two, maybe you come up with the title. If you break it down into these tiny, tiny little steps, it's not going to be daunting, and at the end of the year, you're going to have your script. So, of course, you can't do like a one-word thing every day. You will actually have to start writing at some point, but you get what I'm saying. All right, guys, I got to close. There's another show after this, but have a great evening, and thanks for listening. Good night.
You are listening to Shriekfest Radio.